Yeah, Leviticus chapter 16, verses 29 through 31. It's kind of a review of what we did last week concerning pretty much the main purpose of that feast in Israel's annual calendar.
And this shall be a statute forever unto you, that in the seventh month, on the tenth day of the month, you shall afflict your souls, and do no work at all, whether it be one of your own country, or a stranger that sojourneth among you. For on that day shall the priest make an atonement for you, to cleanse you, that ye may be clean from all your sins before the Lord. It shall be a Sabbath of rest unto you, and ye shall afflict your souls by a statute forever.
Okay, this idea of them afflicting their souls, okay, and particularly it's the context is in reference to reason why they were to do that, because it was basically the atonement, concerning the atonement for their sins for the past year, right? And they had this remembrance of their sins, and they were, in that regard, to afflict their souls concerning their sins of the past year. It was a time that those sins would be atoned for. It's the most sacred day in the annual calendar of the Jews. Okay? Now, this day, the actual day, it's actually called Yom Kippur. We looked at it last week. Yom meaning day, and Kippur being a covering, right? And the thing that we emphasized last week was the fact that Yom Kippur was actually, it was a day when the sins would be covered, right? They weren't necessarily taken away, they were just covered over, okay? And of course we saw in Hebrews that it wasn't possible for the blood of the animals to actually take away sin. And this kind of brings us now to what we're going to look at this morning, considering the prophetic fulfillment of that feast. And remember, you keep in mind that these prophetic fulfillments of every one of these Levitical feasts will occur in the exact day of the exact month that they were observed historically. Okay? So this Feast of Atonement will find this prophetic fulfillment on the 10th day of the 7th month, as we just read. Now let's take a look and see when that what will actually transpire at that time. Take a look at Zechariah chapter 12, verse 10. Okay? Zechariah chapter 12, verse 10. So somebody who is there probably ahead of me can go ahead and read it.
And I will pour upon the house of David upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplication, and they shall look upon me when they appear, and they shall mourn for him as one mourns for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn.
Right. So there is going to be a they're going to look at his nail-pierced hands, right? And they're going to be in bitterness for him, as it says, as if they lost their firstborn son, right? When you look at Israel's experience as a nation, when they sealed those nail-pierced hands, okay, and the reaction that they will have when they see that, it's very much like the reaction that Thomas had. Wasn't it? When he saw, to look over at John chapter 20, verses 26 through 29. John chapter 20, verses 26 through 29. What does it say there?
And after 8 days again, his disciples were within, and Thomas with them. Then came Jesus, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst and said, Peace be unto you. Then saith he to Thomas, Reach hither thy finger, and behold my hand. And reach hither thy hand, and thrust it into my side, and be not faithless, but believing. And Thomas answered and said unto him, My Lord and my God. Jesus saith unto him, Thomas, because thou hast seen me, thou hast believed. Blessed are they that have not seen me, and yet have believed.
So the Lord shows his hands to Thomas. He bids him to go forth and feel and touch the wounds, right? And the reaction of Thomas was what? My Lord, my God, right? That's exactly what Israel is going to be saying at that time. They're going to realize who that is, okay? And they're also going to be very sensibly rebuked, okay, for their unbelief. Thomas, the Lord told Thomas what? Don't be faithless, but believing, right? They will, every Jew at that point that sees that, they will have that same sense of shame, basically, that Thomas had concerning their unbelief. Okay? And now, as concerning when that, how that all works out historically, when that happens, you know, that's going to be a time when God is going to finally avenge Israel of her enemies, right? And before he looks to his own, he's going to take care of some business concerning those that have been their oppressors. Okay? In Zechariah chapter 12, before verse 10, if you look at verses 8 and 9, and it's pretty much going to follow the order in which you read the verses, what does it say in verses 8 and 9?
In that day shall the Lord defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and he that is feeble among them at that day shall be as David, and the house of David shall be as God, as the angel of the Lord before them. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem.
Okay. There is going to be a destruction of all of Israel's enemies. David is going to finally, and in his person being the type of Israel, be strengthened in that day. And take a look at what's actually going to happen to these nations at that time. It's in Isaiah chapter 34, verses 1 through 8. What does it say? Isaiah 34, verses 1 through 8. That's a pretty sobering account of what's going to be happening at the Lord's return concerning his enemies. And basically, the reference there is to the land of Edomia, which basically is the land of Edom. Okay, so right now it's southern Jordan. And Edom, of course, goes back to Esau, right? He who the Lord basically cursed, right? And so it's not surprising that he calls it the land of his curse. And there's going to be a real slaughter there of all the nations, okay? That's going to be the scene of a land that's going to be soaked in blood. And it's going to be as far as the eye can see. Basically in Revelation, when you look at the Battle of Armageddon there, the reference to that 1,600 furlongs or whatever it is in terms of how long that blood is going to flow, it's basically going to be a radius of 200 miles, chest high, okay? Literally. I mean, that's going to be a slaughter, right? That's going to be the mother of all slaughters, basically. I mean, that's the destiny for all those that will come against this people on that day. This is what their fate will be. Another passage kind of very similar like it is Isaiah chapter 63. And notice that in what we read there, that it's the day of the Lord's vengeance. And according with the day of the Lord's vengeance, it had to do particularly with the controversy of Zion. Okay, again, the Lord basically coming and settling accounts. And particularly, Israel is going to be the focal point. So Isaiah 63, verses 1 to 4, what does it say?
Who is this that cometh from Edom with thy garments from Bozrah? This that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength. I do speak in righteousness, and I used to say, wherefore art thou red in thine apparel, and thy garments like him that treadeth in the wine vat? I have trodden the winepress alone, and of the people there was none with me. For I will tread them in mine anger, and trample them in my fury. And their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment. For the day of vengeance is in my heart, and the year of my redeem is come.
Okay, the Lord is going to stain his raiment with the blood of his enemies, right? He comes back in white garments, and the blood of his enemies will stain his garments. And basically, he says he treads the winepress alone. You remember when we looked at the seven bowl judgments in Revelation 15? No man could enter into that temple until it was finished, right? The Lord did it alone, okay? Two things concerning about what the Lord did alone. The atonement was alone, right? And also the judgment, okay?
Now, that's the I and here is God the Father or Jesus?
God the Son.
God the Son.
Yeah. This is exactly what he's who's going to be making that trip through the wine press there. Now, so you can see that basically, prior to the Lord's dealing with Israel concerning their accountability, he will deal with the accountability of the nations. Now come back to Zechariah chapter 12, and let's take a look particularly at this mourning that's going to happen when they see those nail prints in his hands. Remember, this is the ultimate Yom Kippur. This is the fulfillment. It will be literally on the 10th day of the 7th month. Okay, this thing will be fulfilled to the day, just like all the other feasts were. Okay, this is when it'll happen. Take a look at what they do in verse 11. Read verses 11 through 14, somebody.
That day shall there be a great mourning in Jerusalem, as the mourning of Hadarimon in the valley of Megiddon. And the land shall mourn, every family apart, the family of the house of David apart, and their wives apart, the family of the house of Nathan apart, and their wives apart, the family of the house of Levi apart, and their wives apart, the family of Shimei apart, and their wives apart, all the families that remain, every family apart, and all their wives apart.
You know, it's kind of very interesting when you look at the families that are named there. He talks about the house of David. Of course, that's the royal house, right? The king. Then he talks about Nathan, who was basically the prophet, right? And then you have Levi and Shimei, which are the priests, okay? Now, you know that the Lord, in all his three offices concerning reference to Israel, he's prophet, priest, and king, right? And these people that were basically types, the ones who were the soul of the nation, so to speak, they are mentioned as heading this mourning, where they are separating apart even from their wives in terms of just basically leading the mourning of that nation. You see that? It's very significant. It's going to be the most solemn occasion in the entire history of that nation at that day. Okay? Now, one other thing that's very interesting to mention here is verse 11, where he talks about, he makes a reference to the great mourning that happened in Hadrimon, the valley of Megiddo. Okay? Why would he make a reference to that? I mean, what happened back there? Well, that was the mourning for King Josiah. Okay, go to basically 2 Chronicles chapter 35, verses, and let's read that morning account in verses 22 to 25, I think you'll see that it's kind of very similar to what we're reading in Zechariah 12. 2 Chronicles chapter 35, verses 22 through 25. Somebody read that? 2 Chronicles 35, verses 22 through 25.
Shot at King Gasai, and the king said to his servants, "Have me away, for I am sore wounded." His servants therefore took him out of the chariot and put him in the second chariot that he had. And they brought him to Jerusalem, and he died and was buried in one of the sepulchres of his father. And all Judah and Jerusalem mourned for Josiah. And Jeremiah lamented for Josiah, and all the singing of men and the singing of women spake to Josiah in the lamentations of this day, and made them an ordinance in Israel, and behold, they are written in the lamentations.
Okay, so you see, basically, that was a great mourning there, wasn't there? And because he was actually slain at the Valley of Megiddo, is again in the very same place that the Lord mentioned in Zechariah 12, okay? And notice how Jeremiah was lamenting, you know, that he was a key prophet there, okay, warning of the Babylonian captivity. And a very similar type of experience that happened in the nation of Israel was kind of a type as what was happening here in Zechariah chapter 12. Now, as far as King Josiah, he's a very interesting individual. And, you know, and when you think of why would the Lord make a reference to King Josiah here in terms of Israel's ultimate Yom Kippur. Remember who King Josiah was, right? Very few people are actually prophesied by name in the Old Testament, right? Take a look at 1 Kings chapter 13. Somebody read verses 1 and 2. 1 Kings 13, verses 1 and 2. You see, when you start to consider and put these things together, everything is by design here. It's very specific. 1 Kings 13, verses 1 and 2. What does it say?
And behold, there came a man of God out of Judah, by the word of the Lord, unto Bethel. And Jeroboam stood by the altar to burn incense. And he cried against the altar and the word of the Lord, and said, O altar, altar, thus saith the Lord, behold, child shall be born unto the house of David, Josiah by name, and upon thee shall he offer the priest of the high places that burn incense upon thee, and the men of Bethel shall be burnt upon thee.
Okay, that's good. See, basically, Josiah was pretty much a prophesied deliverer from Israel's idolatry, right? Jeroboam, of course, he recognizes that, in fact, he was the first king of the northern kingdom of Israel after Solomon's reign, right? And he basically introduced idolatry at the very outset in that northern kingdom. And this man, Josiah, is prophesied by name to actually remove that, okay? And the fulfillment of that is in 2 Chronicles chapter 34, verses 1 through 7. You can go ahead and read that. 2 Chronicles chapter 34, verses 1 through 7. It's like over 300 years later. What does it say?
Josiah was 8 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned in Jerusalem 1 and 30 years. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, and walked in the ways of David his father, and declined neither to the right hand nor to the left. For in the 8th year of his reign, while he was yet young, he began to seek after God of David his father, and in the 12th year he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem from the high places, and the groves, and the carved images, and the molten images. And they break down the altars of Balaam, and the images that were on his high above him, so he cut them down, and the groves, and the carved images, and the molten images, he break in pieces, and made dust of them, and stirred it upon the graves of them that had sacrificed unto them. And he burnt the bones of the priests upon their altars, and cleansed Judah and Jerusalem. And so did he in the cities of Manasseh and Ephraim and Simeon, even unto Naphtali, with their mattocks round about And when he had broken down the altars and the groves and had beaten the graven images into powder, and cut down all the idols throughout all the land of Israel, he returned to Jerusalem.
And so, that's good. You see, I mean, he totally cleaned house, didn't he? And he did it more so than any of the other kings of Judah did before him, even more than Hezekiah, okay, who is also noted as a great revivalist in Israel's history. He even did it beyond the borders of Judah. I mean, he took care of it in all of Israel, right? Mentioned of Ephraim, Manasseh, Simeon, Ephraim, all the extent of the country, okay? He stamped it out. And this was prophesied, that, you know, he even dug up the priest's bones and burnt them on the altar and tore all the images out. And basically in the last verse, we just read verse 7, he cut out all the idols out of the land, right? Well, in doing that, he's a type of Messiah. Okay, take a look at what happens at the Lord's coming. Zechariah chapter 13, verses 1 to 2. What does it say? Okay, he talks about cutting out the idols out of the land, right? The very same thing that we read about Josiah back there in 2 Chronicles, right? So again, of course, when Messiah returns, it will be a permanently cutting out, right? He says they will no more be remembered, these idols, right? And when you look at Zechariah chapter 12 back again there, you know that kind of weird name there that was there in verse 10, verse 11, a name that says Hadad Rimmon. That's a combination of two names. Those were two names of Syrian deities, okay, that were associated with that valley of Megiddo, okay? And of course, you know what's destined for the valley of Megiddo when the Lord returns. Isn't that going to be the staging point where God gathers all the nations for the final slaughter when he brings them down into Edom? Take a look at Joel chapter 3, verse 14. Joel chapter 3, verse 14. Just a couple more verses. Joel chapter 3, verse 14, what does it say?
Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision.
Okay, and then in Revelation chapter 16, a little more amplified on that, the valley is named again. Revelation chapter 16, verses 12 and 16, what does it say? Verse 16, where does he gather them?
He gathered them together in a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon.
And that is Megiddo. Okay? So everything fits together. What's going to be Israel's experience in terms of finally being repenting of her unbelief, seeing who it is that they should have been worshiping, okay? Josiah being mentioned as a type, as indicating what is going to be the ultimate experience at the Lord's return at that Yom Kippur. It all fits together, okay? Even the idols that were going to be cut out of the land, he mentions two in particular that were associated with the Lord's going to finally gather the nations for their destruction, as kind of putting the exclamation point on the fact that those idols will indeed be cut out, okay? So that's what awaits Israel at the second, at the second coming, great repentance is going to take place again on the day of Yom Kippur, the 10th day of the 7th month, and There's more that we could talk about, but we'll have to do it next week. But next week I want to take a look a little bit more as to how this thing is going to play out, to be fulfilled, in terms of what the Lord is actually going to do to Israel that will finally consummate her redemption. Okay? We want to specifically talk about the new covenant. Okay? Because on the 10th day of the 7th month, that new covenant gets instituted. Okay? And we're going to look at that next week. So...